in Congress and modeling the actions we want our government to take. Again, that's Code Pink Radio, Thursdays at 11 a.m. on Washington, D.C.'s WPFW and New York City's WBAI, an engaging hour of cutting-edge conversation not to be missed.
We are women of the world. We're from the east, south, north, and west.
You're tuned to WPFW, Washington. The Collision is next.
This is a journey.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robertson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome to our show this week where sports and politics collide. As folks know, we are called The Collision. It's Dave Zirin. It's Etan Thomas. Usually it's Chuck Modiano. He's not here this week because his job is based largely around federal grants, and they are in a state of terrible confusion due to Trumpism right now. We have Bill Fletcher coming on at 10:30 to talk about what we're dealing with as a society and as a city. And like I said, the name of our show is The Collision, and usually I say that with a very loud voice that's very fervent and excited about what we're doing. But of course, you know, that's very difficult based on the news right now and based on what happened at DCA Airport last evening. Which, you know, they call Reagan National Airport, and we can talk a little bit about that too. But, you know, that's the news we're reeling from, and frankly, it's just the tip of the iceberg of what we need to talk about. Etan Thomas, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing all right, just trying to wrap my head around everything that just happened yesterday. But, yeah, let's talk about it. There's a lot to talk about.
So much to talk about. So, you know, last night, you know, going to bed after another just day of just relentless attacks by this administration on anybody and everybody who, frankly, doesn't look like them. And we get this news about the plane crash at National. It was, for folks, I'm sure you've heard the news. It was one of those big Sikorsky helicopters, Black Hawk helicopters, as they're known, the ones infamously used in Somalia decades ago by the U.S. government, goes straight into a small 60-seat American Airlines jet coming in. No survivors as of this time. The news, and the news is only beginning to talk about this, now needs to reckon with the fact, with two things, Etan. The first is that the head of the FAA, the person who's in charge of all this safety stuff, was really forced to quit on January 20th on the demand of Elon Musk. So there is no head of the FAA right now as this is happening. And so the person who's been in front of the cameras is the head of transportation, a guy named Sean Duffy. And gee, Etan, who's Sean Duffy? He's a former MTV reality show contestant. That's who's in charge of transportation for our country. And of course, Congress people on TV this morning, you're not going to believe it's on who they are maybe blaming the crash on. They're saying it like it's a big question. We have to get to the bottom if, guess who they think might be responsible? DEI. So, gee, we have to find out if a black person or a woman was responsible. That's what we need to get to the bottom of. And Trump, of course, one of the first things he announced was he was slashing TSA, transportation safety, slashing air traffic control. So this is where we are, Etan. And I'm going to try to do this show without cussing because I have too much respect for WPFW and the fines that may incur, as well as my own position here as a programmer. But the cusses in my brain are flying fast and furious about where we're at with this specific case as well. So, I mean, what is this dynamic, Etan? This deadly incompetence, the soft abilities of these underqualified white men trying to remake our government. I don't know what else to say about it.
Well, there's a lot to unpack with this. One of the things I saw was in the middle of the night, Trump immediately tweeted or posted on Truth Social, but his tweet sounded so deranged. I don't know if you saw it, but let me just read some of it here.
Sure. People got to know.
So this is Trump in the middle of the night while news was still being broadcasted, while information was still being, families was just finding out what had happened. Search and rescue teams were just being deployed. This is what he tweeted. He said the airplane was on a perfect and routine line of approach to the airport. The helicopter was going straight at the airplane for an extended period of time. It was a clear night. He put it in all caps, clear night. The lights on the plane were blazing. Why didn't the helicopter go up or down or turn? Why didn't the control tower tell the helicopter what to do instead of asking if they saw the plane? This is a bad situation that looks like it should have been prevented. And then he wrote in all caps, not good.
Not good. And, it's so interesting because, Harry S. Truman, once said famously, the buck stops here. Mm-hmm. In terms of like, if there are these tragedies on the federal government's watch, you start by looking at the president and then figuring out what happened from there. It flows from there. From Trump, what do you get? Whose fault was it? Because it sure as heck wasn't mine. It's just another example to me about how soft and incompetent these people are. They have no backbone. They have no ability to do anything except bully and attack those weaker than them. So look who Trump's attacking in your statement there, in his statement that you just read.
Uh-huh.
He's attacking the people who are actually working on the ground.
Yep.
There. And certainly he's not attacking, anybody connected to his administration, Elon right. Musk, who may be actually responsible for creating already within days the kind of infrastructure that would allow something like this to happen.
Yeah, he was just trying to point the blame away from himself, away from, anybody that he appointed, any of his actions. That's what he was trying to do. But he didn't even say that he's praying for the family.
Yeah.
He could have at least thrown that in there, but he didn't. That wasn't his focus. It was just who to immediately blame. And that's, but it's not, this isn't something that is, a shocker that he would do during a tragedy. He's done that plenty of times before, but it's just when it happens over and over again, you're still in disbelief. That's the only thing I say. I know a lot of, there. So Barack Obama just tweeted something. And this is what a presidential tweet is supposed to look like at a time of tragedy. This is what it's supposed to be. And then you go from there. But the message to the entire American people was supposed to be something like this. This is what Barack Obama tweeted. He said, "Our hearts break for the families who lost loved ones in this tragic plane and helicopter crash at DCA. Michelle and I send our prayers and condolences to everyone who is mourning today. And we're grateful to the first responders who are doing everything they can to help under extremely difficult circumstances. That's all he should have said. You know what I mean? You don't, I mean, trying to immediately try to blame someone. And now this was, Obama just tweeted this a little while ago, like maybe within an hour. Trump tweeted this in the middle of the night.
Middle of the night.
In the middle of the night where people were still getting news of it. Nothing had even quite, it just had broken. Like everybody was just learning about it. And this is what he tweeted. And it's just, you know he's not presidential, but good Lord.
Yeah, we know he's not presidential. And you see the way one of his apparatchiks, this guy Andy Oglis, who is a nobody senator from, nobody congressperson from Tennessee. And he's the person who submitted for Congress the idea that Trump should be able to run for a third term. He's that clown. You might have heard about that, who stuck that in. And this is where we are right now. And by the way, so, you know, you can't submit a law that's anti-constitutional, but these people don't care about the Constitution. They have reached the point where in their mind, the Constitution is unconstitutional. That's right. Where they are, because right. They want a king. They want a racist king who can be in charge, who can attack the very things like the Black freedom struggle, the women's movement, movements of all marginalized people have fought for over the last decades. And because they root that in the problems of this country instead of the fact that they are in charge when this horrible thing happened. You know what I'm saying? It's like, It's like, how do I not blame myself? But, you know, but Atana, obviously what happened last night for a lot of us was like this horrific end to what had been a horrific few days that I think actually does contain some lessons for us that we're going to talk about with Bill Fletcher at the end of the hour. But I mean, Chuck's not on the show today for a reason. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that federal freeze, but then it's not a freeze because the judges said no after everybody. And I think everybody, red state, blue state, apparently the phones were just beyond off the hook. Ringing in those congressional offices. A judge smacked it down. Trump withdrew it. Chaos everywhere about, is the money flowing or is it not? The college where my daughter goes to, parents are freaking out about like whether Pell Grants, federal aid, will that be touched or affected? The school, and I feel sorry for the school, they don't have any answers. Yeah. They don't know. I'm looking at it. I'm looking at the on Facebook. People are trying to figure it out, like at her school's thread. And it's just so much confusion and tragedy, let alone things, of course, like SNAP benefits, food, Meals on Wheels. Nobody really knows what the future holds for things that people depend on for their lives. And you know, I'm sorry. It's like people who voted for Trump because they thought it meant, lower prices on eggs. You know, I just think, like, for a lot of folks, even though, yes, and I know you're going to say this, Atan, and I agree with you, but even though it's not like Trump didn't telegraph all of this in the lead up, Project 2025 and the like, you know, a lot of people are just like, I don't like inflation. I don't like what's happening. You know, for a lot of folks, of course, racism was a driving force as well. But I'm talking about that layer of voters who are just like unhappy with the status quo and just thought, well, I'll vote for this guy. And man, we're in a world of trouble right now. And I'm just waiting for the kind of response from the Democratic Party that speaks to the level of crisis that we're facing right now. But I do think people are at least starting, because they're getting the phone calls too. And I do think that they're at least starting to see the enormity of the situation. But in those first few days, Atan, it was Bishop Budd over at the National Cathedral. It was that meteorologist from Milwaukee, Sam Cuffell, who lost her job because she dared write on her private Instagram page that she was against having Nazi salutes at the inauguration. She lost her job as a meteorologist. You know, people got their heads down. People are scared, but people are also boiling angry. I mean, it is a lot, like you said. It is a great deal. And I don't know what lessons you might draw from what took place this past week in terms of this terrible federal freeze and then backing up from it Some say it's just their tactics so they can get it in front of the Supreme Court and win it. But other people are just like, they just don't know what they're doing. This is just government by chaos. And they just want to shoot, you know, I hate this metaphor, but it works. Like, they just want to shoot 1,000 shells in all these directions. And if one hits, great. And if the other ones just confuse and terrorize the heck out of people, then that's worth it too.
Well, there's a lot to unpack with what you just said. You know, there is so much blame to go around. And I do, you know, there's a lot of people and demographics to blame because, yes, he said that he was going to do this. We knew that this was what was going to happen. There's a lot of people that, you know, were they had different issues that made them stay away from voting or didn't want to necessarily vote a certain way. Because, but this is exactly what we knew we were going to get. And that's the part that's a little tough for me. You know, I know you say you want to hear from the Democratic Party's response on this, but the Democratic Party has one thing that they have said, but it was consistent, was this is what you're getting with Trump. You know what I mean? Like, that part was consistent. That part was not a mystery. That's not it's not a surprise that we got what we got.
True. And I hear you. Go on, please. Hold on,
let's take a quick break. Let's take a quick break, and we have a lot more that we have to unpack through here. So let's take a little quick break, and we'll be right back with more of The Collision, where sports and politics collide.
Try to tell them they wanna listen. Now they see the kid on the way. My flow morning sickness. Legacy vibes, I give my son a business. I turn 2020 vision into tunnel vision. They say congratulations. I still ain't where I wanna be, so a prayer say one for me. The devil out here lurking and I feel him under me. But still I'm hard to reach, like when your phone fall under seats, like in the car. Control the game with an analog. Chick-fil-A Polynesian. Nobody really know what's in the sauce. Why would I tell them the secret to what I'm cooking? Look at the work I put in, kicking down the door, got my foot in. Though they can't see me, they looking. I'm special with the radios, Cuba Gooden. Even when they tried to slow me down, I kept it pushing. Can't get comfortable at the bottom, it ain't no cushion.
I'ma do that. What? That's why they call it rock bottom.
We are back here on The Collision. It's a difficult day, of course, to say the name of our show. But we're The Collision, where sports and politics collide. We are trying to speak about what's happening in the world and try to make sense of it. We'll have Bill Fletcher on at 10:30, who can push this point. I mean, Etan, let's take it to the – there's so many executive orders we can talk about, but I want to take it to the thing that, frankly, could get my wife arrested. She's a teacher and high school teacher, and they say that they are putting down a federal ordinance – against teaching about Black history, against teaching about gender, and that they are going to run it through the Justice Department, try to cut federal funds. Of course, this is just a precursor to attacking teachers themselves. I ask you, Etan, weren't they supposed to be about local control of schools? Wasn't that supposed to be a hallmark of the Republican Party?
Well, everything that they say, you have to really understand that it applies where they want it to apply. Mm. So they want state rights in certain things, but then they want to be able to use, if there's a tragedy that happens, like a hurricane or, you know, a fire or something like that, to be able to use funding, you know, at their discretion and say, okay, well, you know, if we're going to give you this federal help, then you have to do this. Not that you should just get the federal help. Do you know what I mean? Or depending on their personal relationship, when I say they, I'm talking about Trump and the Trump administration's personal relationship with the state. And then that determines how everything is then implemented, whether it's, you know, through what's being taught in school or anything else. So everything kind of works. My mother's a teacher and retired teacher now in Oklahoma. And so the things that are going on and what is being told there is a prime example. I mean, they're putting all the teachers on notice, like, you know, you can't teach this and you can't do that. And, you know, there's other teachers there. They're having big situations with ICE, you know, because now they could come into the schools and just snatch some kids up that they have suspected of that they're undocumented. And that in itself is, you know, problematic, but now they have to then acquiesce to what Trump says, but then they say, okay, but you have the free. So it's not really, it's like a mirage. That's what I'm trying to say. You know what I mean? They want they want you to have state rights, but it's basically as long as it goes along with what they want it to be. So it's not really state rights.
Yeah. And I was raised, you know, with Republicans in my family. Obviously, I argued with them constantly. And their three principles, I want to talk to them because this is what they always said to me. I was like, you know, the party, racism, you know, division, you know, I would attack them with that, attacking, you know, a safety net for the people who need it the most. Those were my arguments to them. Their arguments back to me was this: free markets, local control, and states' rights. And I'm looking, in the Constitution. And I'm looking at Trump and I see tariffs, full federal control of everything. And the Constitution is basically a detail to these people. They are lawless. And all the Republicans lining up behind them anyway.
Yeah.
And it's just the absence of principles. And some people who are in my circle, my family, are actually seeing that they're never Trumpers, et cetera, because of this. But I got it. The mass of them are fine with this. And that's where I get to the thing about the Democratic Party. I'm not saying they're not fighting. I'm saying they're showing up in the ring with boxing gloves and the other side's got like a board with a nail through it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And they're coming with five people into the ring. And you could stand there in your boxing gloves and look at the referee and say, hey, this isn't fair. This is not a boxing match. But then the referee looks suspiciously like Sam Alito or Clarence Thomas. And they're like, tough luck. Again, trying desperately to keep my language on point. It's just so, Atan, what do you think also about like through a lot of the federal government? Like, I mean, this is something I did not expect. Like, we talked about, well, we could have expected this. I mean, I'll ask you, Atan, did you expect like the canceling of Black History Month?
I did. I'm not sure. That wasn't a shocker to me.
How about this one? The canceling of Holocaust Remembrance Day. Did you see that coming?
I did not see that one.
You did not see that coming.
I didn't see that one coming. But in talking about, because I know one of the topics that, you know, and rightfully so, that the Biden administration was very poor on was on Palestine. And in the middle of a complete genocide, ethnic cleansing going on, and the Biden administration was funding it. Yes. And that, unfortunately, that's one of those topics where, you know, no matter who is president, it's like that topic doesn't change. That level of, you know, unconditional support for Israel does not change. And they might say it in different ways. You know, Biden or Kamala Harris might have, you know, expressed an ounce of humanity for Palestinians, but then fund Israel the same amount the next week. And you know what I mean? It doesn't really
wasn't matched with policy. Right. Wasn't matched with policy.
So that part, you know, but with Trump, I did expect for things to be even worse on a whole nother level, if it could possibly be worse from a genocide and ethnic cleansing. If that, you know what I mean? Like I did expect there to be, you know, even worse announcements made, even worse rhetoric, even worse, you know, but that was a really difficult situation. And I have to, you know, always say that I understand why, you know, people who were, that was
their families.
Yeah, yeah. Their family, their friends, and they just could not bring themselves to vote for either one because either way it would have been bad. I think one time when you weren't here, me and Chuck, you know, kind of dissected that a lot. But either way, it was like horrible and more horrible were the two options. So, you know, like those are two terrible options to have. So I, you know, you can't help but understand that.
And you might have seen, oh, sorry, go ahead, sir.
There was a different, you know, kind of underswelling of movement of people that said that they wanted more tangibles. This is that one aside. So they wanted more tangibles from Kamala Harris, more tangibles from the Biden administration, and they proposed it as though Trump was a better option. And those are the people that I have so much of an issue with. I'm like, how was he a better option? I understand, yes, there's so a laundry list of things that the Biden administration should have done that were specific to the Black community, that was specific to you know what I mean, the brown community, that was specific. However, look at the alternative. And in looking at the alternative and seeing the things that he's implementing right now that are specific to the Black and brown community, that part is not a surprise to me because he literally said he was going to do all of that.
Well, it's very tough when the choice is we're going to cut you off at the knee or we're going to cut you off at the hip, because, of course, anybody would choose the knee. But it's like, wow. What a choice.
Yeah.
How about I keep my leg and get a healthy shoe?
Right.
So I can walk at this point. Mm-hmm. That's what makes it so difficult and so maddening. The first guest, of course, traditionally for any new administration, and this goes way back. I don't think Trump did it in 2016, but the longstanding tradition is that the first foreign guest you receive at the White House is Canada.
Right.
Of course. Canada is now being threatened with being the 51st state.
Yeah.
I mean, is my son going to be drafted for a war in Quebec? I mean, what are we doing? And so, you know, France has pledged to send army into Greenland to help repair. I mean, this is unbelievable as a situation. So all the people who also said Trump wasn't a war hawk, and now it's like that's one thing I have to say, Etan. That in terms of what wasn't said in the campaign and what is being said now, the idea of an imperial presidency, because he did run on, I will get a ceasefire in the Middle East, I will get a ceasefire Russia, Ukraine. And I didn't hear anything about like the literal seizure of Canada as a 51st state. I didn't hear anything about fighting the French army.
Is it a surprise? So like yesterday, I get mixed up. Might have been yesterday, the day before that.
I know, right?
he announced that he's opening a detention center
at
Guantanamo Bay to hold up to 30,000 migrants in the U.S. illegally. And that, to me, as soon as I heard him talking about that, said, okay, so that sounds like a concentration camp that you are opening up. So that part of what he wants to do, I don't know if that is as horrible as it is. Is it really a big stretch that's the direction that he's going towards? Even just if you look at his conversation during the debates, that was not really that big of a surprise. I mean, that was his number one. He repeated it over and over again. Like that was, and whenever people would say that, oh, there's a lot of comparisons to a certain mustache tyrant from the past, and people would shoot it down and say, no, you can't make those kind of comparisons. This is nothing like this. And everything that he's doing is along the lines of that mustache tyrant. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
you know, I don't know. It's just that we knew what he was. I don't know why people just didn't believe it, that it could possibly be as bad. You know, even the people who are saying, okay, they're surprised of what's happening now with healthcare. And they're surprised. I'm like, how are you surprised he said this? You know what I mean? Like
I'm not excusing on this, but you are somebody who is on it, who is following, not just following it, but you're listening for what's also not being said, but what's clearly being said. And that's just not most people in this country. I mean, maybe this will shock people towards that. But, and then I know we got to go to break. We're going to bring on Bill Fletcher, continue this discussion. Mm-hmm. But I had a friend of mine who said to me the other day, wow, maybe, you know, hundreds of thousands of his supporters are going to have to die from like a preventable disease in order for them to see. And I said to him, but we lived through that already.
Right.
In 2020. Right. So no, they're not going to break from it, even on penalty of death. But I don't feel hopeless. I feel like there are paths now that frankly didn't even exist days ago that I think people can fight back. So let's go to break right now. We got some more music we want to play. The music that Etan brings to the show is always special. Listen closely. And when we come back on the other end, we're going to get Bill Fletcher on the line and see if we can come up with some kind of strategic plan, especially in the wake of what happened at D.C., Reagan National, and see what that's...
Call it Reagan National. Just call it National.
No, I call it National. It's actually, I found this out, it's in the pilots' union contract that they have the right whether they want to call it Reagan or National. Oh. So when you're flying in, always listen to what the pilot says. Oftentimes they do just say National, and I'm always like, okay, I like this pilot. You know what I'm saying?
I didn't know that.
That's a little factoid. But of course, Reagan. I'm using Reagan with a capital R-E-A. When I'm talking about this, only because I want people to remember how he fired the traffic controllers. I know we got to go to break. Let's go to break right now. Station break. We'll be back right after this with Bill Fletcher on the line.
Complain, but there's things in the game.
What's your name?
Consequence, I'm tight, burnt like flames.
And why's that?
American dream, they got this ghetto kid in the fiend.
Don't stress that, cause it's not in your bloodstream. Your whole being comes from greatness, you remember. Chase Long got you caught in the storms of December. And brothers on the block packing nines like September. Change the situation, Chevy's is all slender.
Yo, I be on the avenue where they be acting brand new. I'm flooding on these Reebok joints for shorty boo.
All of a sudden, I saw these two kids fronting. Talking out they joints, but they wasn't saying nothing. My hand was on my coolie, they was acting unruly.
Say word.
Yo, word up, yo, I was tight, caught up. But I swallowed my pride to let that nonsense ride. Because the positive, it seems that negative die.
Yeah, we was at the dice game, making these cats look silly. Flaming, steady running off at the willy.
I have my cash fixed, my rent loop with my play dough. I gotta see some loot, so all my girls I blow. Took pigs, popo, I got to go on the app, see my parole by four. But I gotta steady freak these boys like JoJo.
And I was doing it till I met Ice Spike and Mike. One roll, they had my pocket so dear, they Sprite.
We're back here on The Collision. Etan, I know Q-Tip's voice anywhere. What were we just listening to, please?
We were listening to Stressed Out by A Tribe Called Quest. And we're trying not to be stressed out right now. So it's very relevant to how a lot of people are feeling.
Amen. We have on the line, we spoke to him last week. We really wanted a part two of the discussion. You know him as a long-distance fighter, particularly on issues of labor and anti-racism. We're thrilled to have him on the show. We need to talk some form of strategy. Bill Fletcher. Bill, how you doing, sir?
Chipper's a chipmunk, man. How you doing?
I'm sure. I'm putting on... Man, you threw me with that. Bill, straight up, I mean, from a labor perspective, I'm hoping just from the starting point, you can talk about what occurred at National Airport last night, and what you think. I know it just happened last night, but what you think, how we need to be thinking about this, because obviously everybody in our area in particular is reeling from what took place.
You're talking about the collision?
Yes, sir.
I don't know what I can speak about it from a labor standpoint. I can say that the air traffic control people in the United States are among the most qualified probably on this planet.
Uh-huh.
And how these two aircraft got in each other's way is a complete mystery. And I don't know. I mean, it just, there's no way of knowing yet, Dave.
Got you.
But what I'm hoping does not happen, particularly with the Prince of Darkness in power, is some sort of blame game that's thrown around without proper investigation. And this could be very, very dangerous, because given the Prince of Darkness's approach to things, it's very possible that he will get on Twitter and start making pronouncements about the disaster. And,
oh, yeah.
And we've got to resist this. Mm-hmm. We've got to oppose such things. But that's probably all I can say right now.
No, very understood. Very understood. Before Atan, real quick, what about a labor perspective from events of the broader week, particularly the attack on federal workers? Do you see any rumblings in the labor movement to challenge this right now? Can you talk to us?
No. See, so first of all, and this is why it goes back to our discussion last week and something that you said, Etan, I am furious with people that are acting surprised. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like people that were surprised when Hitler took over and said, well, we never knew this what was going to happen. Well, did you read Mein Kampf, you ass? And so in this case, it's did you read Project 2025? It's all laid out, everything that they're moving, right? Despite Trump's denials when he was running. It's all laid out there. So in terms of the federal workers, it's important to understand what exactly is now happening. So this email comes out from OPM basically asking people to resign. It doesn't follow any of the procedures that one is supposed to follow. And so in some ways, it is like a threat.
Mm-hmm.
Because it announces all of these changes and basically tells federal workers things are going to become like hell. So if you don't want to be burning in hell, you should leave, right? This violates every process for removing federal workers. Now, fortunately, a few weeks ago, some rank and file leaders from federal sector unions began to come together, and they set up a network called Federal Unionists Network Fund. And in their first web, a Zoom discussion, they had more than 200 people. It keeps growing. You've got people that are ready to move and are beginning protests. From what I'm reading, there are unorganized protests by individuals that are going on. So the resistance is growing. And what I keep cautioning people about is we should analogize what we're experiencing right now to an invasion. A massive invasion has taken place. In the immediate aftermath of a massive invasion, unless you have the right defenses, you're going to be on a retreat until you can reorganize and then go forward. I think that the expectations that there would be massive responses along the lines of the 2017 Women's March were very overstated and did not understand the shock value of a very well-prepared Trump administration and what they are moving to do. So there are alliances that are moving, there I understand yesterday that a number of union leaders are talking about getting more coordination of their work. The effort of my little outfit, Standing for Democracy, continues on building organizing committees. So there is going to be a fight. There's also going to be, as we can see, massive fights in the courts. The illegality of steps that are taken, the most recent executive orders around education, basically trying to tell state departments of education what they should do. And if they don't comply, that they're going to lose funding, which is equivalent of blackmail. And people are fighting back. The secretary, I think it's Secretary of Education for California, already uttered words that were analogous to the words that a U.S. general used in the Battle of the Bulge in 1944 when the Germans asked him to surrender, and his response was nuts. Mm-hmm. And basically, that's what the California is saying. And that's what more education departments at the state and local level are going to have to do.
Mm. Let me ask, how do you, and we touched on it a little bit last week, but it's coming up a lot more as people are getting exhausted from everything. And some people want to check out, and then something else happens, which has been, you know, every day, unfortunately, every morning. Now everybody's kind of waking up, kind of worrying about, okay, what's crazy is going to happen next from this cat. And then sure enough, you know, he one-ups it from what happened the previous day. But how do we keep everyone from not getting completely exhausted and checking out? What can people tangibly do right now?
Okay, that's a great question. And the answer is we learn from disasters, the immediate aftermath of disasters, that one of the things that has been determined is that in the immediate aftermath of a disaster, you have to give people something to do, right? You don't stand around and mourn. You don't complain. You don't have people sit around and rest. You immediately give them something to do. And that something to do might be, in the case of a natural disaster, clearing out debris or helping people to evacuate or whatever. In our case, Eitan, we've got to give people things to do. I was on text this morning with a friend of mine who is panicking, and is basically you know, saying, well, what, you know, I don't know what to do. No, no, no. I said, join the Working Families Party. That was my answer, right? I said, join the Working Families Party. I didn't want to say shut the up, right? I just said, join the Working Families Party. In other words, that there are things that individuals can do when you know the person. That's what we need to be doing, Eitan, so that people are not sitting around. Now, there are going to be those, as you say, that are checking out. And they're going to check out, for, in some cases, for a long time. And there's very little you can do about that. It's sort of the equivalent of battle fatigue. And so, essentially, you got to leave them alone and focus on people that are prepared to act. Don't spend a lot of time trying to reinvigorate people who are completely despairing, because what it will do is it will bring you down.
Mm. Now, Bill, you've been in the labor movement a long time. One of the promises of the labor movement that a lot of us have felt is that it could be a tonic or an answer in a society divided by racism. That multiracial struggle is possible, that you could bring black workers and white workers together to not just fight around economic issues, but fight around oppression issues that keep working people divided. We're in a climate right now where the head of the Teamsters, Sean O'Brien, is at inauguration parties in a tuxedo and spoke at the RNC and recently on his podcast said some viciously, viciously anti-immigrant rhetoric. In this climate, let's forget about how people voted. In this climate right now, what are the prospects, do you think, for multiracial unity in the labor movement? And should that even be something that we work towards at this point?
Well, the good chairman said once, one divides into two. Mm. And so there is no monolith. There never is. And the labor movement is far from a monolith. What you described about O'Brien, there's a long history to that, Dave. If you go back to the 19th century, the founder of the International Seamen's Union, a Finnish immigrant named Andrew Firth, he became a very prominent force and a very open white supremacist, very, very anti-Asian. You see, the thing about the labor movement is that it offers a possibility, but it does not offer an assurance. So it offers the possibility of building class unity. But depending on the nature of the leadership and the class consciousness, not only the leadership, but also the membership, you may go down the route of an Andrew Firth or a Sean O'Brien, or you may go the direction of Harry Bridges, who was the founding president of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union, who in fact had a class struggle approach, who was on the left, who built unity between African Americans, Asians, Latinos, whites, et cetera, right? So that's the question. We have to fight for the right kind of leadership. This is what I've committed my life to. This is what we've got to be doing right now. Because what you're going to see in the labor movement, and it's already emerging, are three general tendencies. They're the collaborators, those that are going to collaborate with the fascists. There are the ostrich strategists, right, who are going to put their heads in the ground and hope that their rear end is there in 4 years. And then there's the resistors. And we see those tendencies already emerging. A lot of union leaders, either because of confusion or because of cowardice, are going to fall into the middle category. They're going to hope and pray that they can survive this without shaking things up, failing to recognize that they got to carry out struggle within their ranks, with their members, so that their members are very clear about the nature of the far right, the nature of what Trump is doing. And the final thing I'd say is this. We have no interest as workers in collaborating with fascists. None. Nada. Mm. And those that say, well, you know, we got to find common ground. I don't know what kind of common ground there is with fascists.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know where that is either. Atan, anything you want to throw in here? I mean, I got like things bursting out of my brain.
Yeah, I know we're coming up. The time goes by so fast. There's so much. I want to say, and then one thing, you know, we touched on it a little bit last week. It's really pushing for prominent people, people in the public eye, whether they not just athletes, but you know, anyone in the public eye, to continue using their platforms. How effective do you think that can possibly be? Because I'm just worried about people getting so exhausted and kind of checking out.
Okay.
And I keep hearing that over and over again.
So first thing each time, you got to call me Bill. Mr. Fletcher was my father.
It's all respect.
No, I'm just messing with you. I agree, and I really do actually appreciate that respect very much. See, one of the things, I can't remember whether we talked about this last week, but what you're proposing is absolutely what's needed right now. And one way to think about this is that we need echo chambers. We need people around the country that are articulating a common message or messages. So in other words, it's not good enough to have an individual athlete speak up on an issue. There need to be a whole set of athletes that are speaking up and saying the same thing. They don't have to say, well, as such and such says. They need to basically be articulating this message. This becomes very important. We need to be using podcasts more strategically. We need to convene major podcasters and other influencers and talk with them about what's going on. So the Heritage Foundation, the right-wing think tank, they will send out information to their vast networks, and they'll send out talking points that help the people that follow them get their bearings. We don't do enough of that. So I think all of that becomes very, very important. The strategic use of social media, particularly whether it's Twitter, Facebook, Blue Sky, you know, whatever. And I think there, we've got to do some very serious thinking about when, if and when, we should abandon any platforms. Because as you know, there's this whole discussion about people leaving Twitter because of how bad Musk is, right? And I get that on one level. Problem is, there's a whole lot of people that follow Twitter. And so the question is, do we need to be there, fight back? And these are some of the issues of strategy that I think we have to take up. The other thing is, always remember the stronger the core, the broader the front. That if the most committed anti-fascists are not working together and are doing more than just running their mouths and are actually making plans and doing things jointly, if we're not doing that, we will not be able to get the breadth of activism and unity that we need in order to win. That's the critical thing. If you look at any situation where fascists have been successfully fought, it's the strong core that is able to build the broader front. It's not like people just automatically come together. But see, here's the final thing, man, that in the face of the far right, a lot of people get really scared. And they're thinking as individuals. We want people to be thinking collectively. We want people to understand we've got the numbers. We've got the majority. We can kick the rear of the far right, but we've got to do it in tandem. We've got to do it collectively. We can't do it as just individual heroics.
Amen to that. Certainly. We're just about running out of time. I got to ask one last question for you, Bill, before you go. Just real quick, we only have a little bit of time. Where are you on the hope meter in terms of the ability in the short term to be able to build something that can actually combat this?
Oh, absolutely.
I see boiling rage out there. Not just, yeah. I mean, I agree with Atan very much, and I agree with you about the checking out. Right. But I'm also seeing a shift even in the last couple of days on that.
That's right. Someone once said, in order to become disillusioned, you first had to have illusions. I had no illusions about what was going to happen after January 20th. And I'm angry, I'm furious, but I remain hopeful because I do see the resistance. Part of what happened the other day with blocking that executive order on the money to federal monies, was that the guy got tripped up. We need more of that.
I agree.
Undermining your opponent's strategy ultimately defeats your opponent. It's not just what happens in the face-to-face combat. It's understanding your opponent's strategy, undermining it, which often necessitates a fair degree of mischief. That's what we got to be thinking. There was a lawsuit filed just the other day in South Carolina that challenges these so-called anti-critical race theory laws that are going on. This is something I've been hoping for and talking about for a couple of years. We need to combat this stuff openly, undermine their strategy. Once you've undermined their strategy, we can walk in.
Bill, I'm so glad we got to do this again this week. It rounds things out. I really hope what you said about the three splits in the labor movement would be an article that you write. If you write it for The Nation, I will fight for it to get in there. But we got to go right now. Atan, any last words, sir?
Oh, no, just my condolences to all the family. They said there was no survivors from the plane crash, and it's just heartbreaking to hear. So my condolences to all the people who lost their loved ones in that tragedy.
I join with you on that.
Unlike the president, I join you with that as well and offer condolences. All right, everybody out there listening, everybody. Oh, sorry, Bill. Please stay strong.
You too. Keep the faith.
Yeah, I love it. Keep the faith for everybody out there. Please stay frosty. Yeah. We are out of here. Peace.
Okay.
Rise to the occasion. Look at yourself and say you're strong. No one can stop you. Rise to the occasion, go ahead, you know you're strong. No one can stop you.
It's for you to make the best in the life. Now that you've got the chance, get up and step towards your goal. It's alright. Fulfill your needs and wants. You to make the best in the life. Now that you've got the chance, get up and step. Your goal is alright.
Yeah, yeah. Some people read and meditate. Others move scanty, yo. Some people are conscious about life. Others are still panting, yo. Some people like strong drink, cognac, champagne and brandy, yo. Babies love ice cream and cake and candy, yo. I love herbs and girls, good words, roots and my shanty, yo. Girls love clothes and shoes, girls to school, brand new and a mean spanking, yo. Yes, we all need education because that's the damn thing, yo. All things fade, leaving it standing.
It's for you to make the best in the life. Now that you've got the chance, get up and step towards your goal. It's alright.
Fulfill your needs and wants.
You to make the best in the life. Now that you've got the chance, get up and step.
Perseverance for the utmost best should be your preference. Skills of trade and talents is your evidence. Help those afar off, teach those in your residence. Whoa, yeah, yeah. Girls getting sentiments. Look at it with a clear conscience.
It's for you to make the best in the life. Now that you've got the chance, get a first step towards your goal. It's alright. Needs and wants. It's for you to make the best in the life. Now that you've got the chance, get up and step towards your goal. It's alright.
People try so many things just to make a living. Thanks and praise to the King, ever living Thanksgiving. Yeah. Need no distractions, stay focused because it now begins. Got to achieve your goals. I'm the so vivid. No pride, no killing, no confusion. Life is so real, no time for disillusion. Just like mom would say, love is that solution.
Hi, this is Jim Byers, host of the Latin Flavor Classic Edition. Support from listeners like you are the tools that have built WPFW over nearly five decades. We provide news, music worth listening to, and in-depth conversations about your community and the world. One of the many ways that you could contribute is to donate a vehicle that you no longer need, running or not. It can do wonders for WPFW. So donate it for a tax break for 2024. Go to WPFWFM.org or call 1-866-WPFW-CAR. That's 1-866-973-9227 for more information. Help WPFW continue building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
And in just a few moments, we'll have Code